Explore the tropics at Whole Foods Market through April 16th. Save on juicy finds like yellow mangoes at 5 for $5 with Prime. Sweet Dacopan citrus is back, just $3.49 per pound with Prime. Plus, save on seasonal favorites like dragon fruit, kiwi, pineapple, and more. In the meat department, pick up animal welfare certified meats with tropical-inspired marinades. And be sure to try the spicy Hawaiian pizza, back for a limited time, only at Whole Foods Market.
All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
One, two, three. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Warm up my panini.
Yeah.
On my Foreman grill.
Yeah.
Warm her for Nani.
Yeah.
Oh my.
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Fonte.
Yeah.
DJ Drama's my peoples.
Yeah.
The best gangsta grills.
Yeah.
Separate but equal.
Oh, fuck. Back. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Sugar.
Yeah.
I don't need no drama.
Yeah.
But I do need a DJ.
Yeah.
Ah, fuck it, you're hired.
Hey, I'm offended.
Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
It's La Ia.
Yeah.
And it's a must.
Yeah.
You know that DJ Drama.
Yeah.
Was my college crush.
Roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
It's DJ Drama.
Yeah.
You know my mama.
Yeah.
She's a white lady.
Yeah.
She didn't go to Grady.
Roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
Oh boy.
Wow. All right.
That was fun. Yeah, so that's the episode.
Yeah.
See you next go around.
All right. Look, I will shut up, man. All right. So I will say this much. Back when my band started the tour in 1994, I kept receipts of which DJs were open to us and filling and supporting us. And of course, you know, some cats up in New York, Tony Toca, you know, Tony Touch. Showed us love, this cat named Boo the Barber, who used to do these blends. Showed us love, of course, Philly's own Cosmic Kev, DJ Cash Money. But there was one mixtape in particular that always got run on our tour bus. And it just said Illadelph on it. You know, it meant something to me because this is the first time that I'm hearing Malik B and Tariq and Dice for All actually on a mixtape. And we just ran that tape over and over. Like, that was damn near the soundtrack to 1994 and 95 on our tour bus. So cut to 7 years later, you know, once the roots sort of evolve and whatnot, and now we have two tour buses. As I've joked before, that there was this Slytherin tour bus and the Gryffindor tour bus. So I'd be on Slytherin, which was Tariq's bus. And, you know, which was, it was always popping on his bus. We were the nerd bus, but, you know, his joint was always popping. And it wasn't until, like, the end of maybe the Phrenology tour where Tariq's trying to explain to me that every time I hear this little... He's trying to explain to me that that's Tyree from back in Philly. It's dramatic. And I'm like, wait, it doesn't make sense, though. It doesn't... Only because the thing was, is that that mixtape of 94, I've never heard someone just devote an entire mixtape to what we called underground or backpack rap or whatever. You know what I mean? Which is why the Roots couldn't find any real estate on your SNS or your Tony Touch. Not Tony Touch. Like, you know, like.
K-Slay or.
Yeah, all those. Like, we barely got on them joints. I was like, wait a minute. He, what? And they're like, yeah, man, he moved to Atlanta. And now he's, you know, I've always wanted to have this conversation with, if you know, it's like we never chopped it up for real.
So dope.
I knew one of these days we were going to have a conversation, so I wanted to save it for here.
I'm glad. I know we've had a couple of interactions on IG about it, but never like in depth.
This is going, like, yes, this is our first in-depth conversation. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Questlove Supreme, the master, God himself,
Mr. Thanksgiving.
Yes. DJ Drama.
Oh, man. Thank you.
AKA DJ Dramatic.
Thank you for having me.
Do you get tired of those people like always pointing out the Mason-Dixon line of your before and after life?
No, I don't get tired of nothing because they could never care. So, yeah, nothing tires me when it comes to that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a very important part of the story for myself and for hip-hop and for Southern culture, like in a lot of ways, you know, like what if I would have went to Temple or what if I would have went to NYU, you know what I'm saying? So the fact that this kid from Philly who literally grew up watching the Roots as his inspiration of, wow, you can really do this, and DJing for Bahamadia, and, you know, wow. My roommate when I got to college was Rubix, whose best friend was Talib Kweli, and I'm DJing Lyricist Lounges, and then that kid goes on to be a part of and transform like trap music and
movement.
Gangsta Grills becomes like the most important mixtape series literally of all time, but also how important it was to Southern hip hop culture. So yeah, it's one of those like destiny stories to me when,
okay,
you know, when it's told. And like, I've literally been in Atlanta longer than I was in Philly, but those 18 years of born and raised in Philly, once from Philly, always from Philly, you know what I'm saying? So, you know.
All right, when's the last time you said John?
I say John all the time.
There you go. You know? All right, just checking.
even at Mean Streets, like, you know, some of my employees who started interns, like, we have signs up, like, do not come in this John. Like, or in our new building Generation Now, like, there's a big sign of Kobe, or we have, like, a Philly map on the side. So we still rep.
Word up. Okay, yeah. That's what's up. Of course, Laia, you mentioned on your roll call that you two went to Clark. So
you
now you're from Atlanta.
I remember the day.
I thought it was always that I had a crush on you.
No, don't do that. That's a lie. Me and Nadine used to fight over you all the time, and you know that. Let's not do that.
Yeah, I thought it was the other way around.
I used to still wear
the green fatigues from I. Goldberg, like when I got to school.
With the dashiki.
I still had them joints.
And the locks.
Yeah.
And the locks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely had the long locks.
So yeah. That's why this is a whole interesting thing. And it's funny because Amir, he said if it was in demand, he would do an automatic relaxation mixtape again.
Yeah.
I just want to say that to everybody who's listening. Did you hear this, Fonte?
Yes, well, you hear that, all you 50-year-olders out there?
Right. Well,
he has us covered.
Interestingly enough, just even during my most recent tour that I went on, I actually physically got my hands on the first automatic relaxation, which was the first CD, which happened to be called, it was Hip Hop Lovables. Like, people don't realize, like, when I first made Automatic Relaxation, like, it was before neo soul was a thing, or like hip hop love songs were, like, you know, before everybody was like singing, or it was so much melody. So, like, you know, it was a Hip Hop Lovables. Like, I named it that because it didn't really exist at the time. And then I just recently got my hands on my actual Illadelph tape with, you know, thoughts.
You have a copy of it?
I do. I should have brought it.
Damn.
I definitely should have brought it. I got the green cup. My homeboy from Philly who lives across the street from my mom, Dee, shout out to Dee, he found it in his crib. And I was like, if you go on my Instagram, I actually show it, the tape, yeah. And then I go and then show my Grammy, like, to see where I came from and where I'm at now.
How it started, how it's going.
Yeah, how it's going. Yeah.
So for you, what was your first musical memory?
My first musical memory for me is being in Germantown. My dad lived on Rubicam Street, and the older kids having the younger kids say, the roof is on fire. We don't need no water. Let it burn. Let it burn. And they left out motherfucker. Like, I vividly remember years later being like, damn, I didn't know they said let the motherfucker burn, because they used to say let it burn, let it burn. And then, I mean, my dad was a big doo-wop guy, so I definitely grew up around, like, him playing a lot of the Commodores and the Temptations and obviously Thriller. Thriller came out 83, you know, so I was probably like, I was five when Thriller came out, so that was a big moment. And then another one for me was definitely wanting Adidas because of my Adidas. Like, I didn't get, my parents bought me the wrong ones. They bought me, like, they didn't buy me the ones with the three stripes. Right. Yeah, I didn't get the three stripes, so.
But they were still Adidas, though, right?
They were Adidas. They were Adidas, but they weren't the three-striped ones.
There was, like, an Eckerd's Drugs. My parents were doing, like, a
Eckerd's,
shit.
Wow.
They were doing a residency in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Anybody from Puerto Rico that remembers, I think back in 86 or 87, when the DuPont Plaza, there was like a battle between the union staff, which I don't know if they were mob connected or whatever, and the hotel management. They threatened, like, if you don't renegotiate our contract, we're going to blow this hotel up. Because we checked out, we had a New Year's gig in Lancaster, PA that night. So we checked out at, you know, 12 p.m. on December 30th, flew back to the States. And came back home with all these messages like, are you guys alive? Are you? And then we found out that there was an explosion in the DuPont Plaza. I think like 18 people died or whatever. Mm. But the whole point was there was an Eckerd's Drugs across the street. And, you know, this is when Adidas made top 10 Adidas, the red, blue, and green, like, high top thing. And so they were like, we got you top 10 Adidas. But it had four stripes.
Oh.
It was like the $12.99 Jordan.
Not Adidas and not K-Swiss either.
Oh. Yeah. And that's
Ablibas.
And that's when, right. And that's when, like, you had to run your shoes down before you got another pair of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just before all in seventh pair. Grade, I just got laughed at because, you know, I got a pleather Thriller suit and I got four stripes in my Adidas. So.
He was that nerd.
Well, similar. Yeah, I got the wrong. I felt like I didn't get the right Adidas. I'll never forget that.
I see. But for you, when did at least turntablism, like, when did that attract you?
So for me, when I grew up, you know, I mean, the first, like, piece of vinyl that I got was this compilation vinyl. It was called, like, Street Rap.
And it was like a K-Tel Records joint or something?
It had, like, to be something like that. I don't even remember where I got it, but... And it had, like, Rock Box on it. It had Roxanne, UTFO.
K-Tel.
And I remember, like, you know, literally, like, memorizing Roxanne by UTFO. And it had a couple other songs on there. So that was my first actual physical, like, piece of hip-hop vinyl. But around, like, maybe, like, 10, 11... I got really into skateboarding, you know, and I was super into skateboarding, and it was all about Thrasher magazine. It was all about going down to Love Park. So this is like in middle school for me. And, you know, I came up at a time when down at Love Park, there started to be this movement or this group of black skateboarders. So it was maybe like 7-8 of us at the time. And, you know, shout out to my brother Stevie Williams. He was like the youngest of all of us, and he was also the best. Fortunately, I was the worst. So,
what about Chuck Treese? Was he around back then?
I think so.
He's older, though.
Yeah, he was older. He was older.
And he's still skateboarding.
And he's still old.
Yeah, we're a little younger. But, you know, they used to basically, like, make fun of me because I could barely land a kickflip. And, like, or even, like, when we used to, like, go to Wawa and, like, steal the fucking, the jugs of iced teas and everything. And then, like, when we would skate off, I would always be, like, behind.
Get
everything.
Caught.
Yeah. Never got caught, but I was last when we would try to skate back to Love. So, yeah, I was super into skateboarding. I think Nickelodeon had, like, Skate TV out or something around the time. And then, between eighth grade and ninth grade, I went to the movies to go see Juice, and I was just blown away. I think for a certain age group of us as DJs, like, Juice was really... is really monumental in our careers because, you know, and again, like, in Philly culture, like, we always, like, Philly had the DJs, New York had the rappers, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I knew early on about Cash Money and Miz and Jeff and what have you. So, but it was really Juice that started my fascination with, like, that's, I might want to try that, you know what I'm saying? Like, I dabbled about, you know, with rapping a little bit, never was really that good at it. And then, so, ninth grade, after seeing Juice, I convinced my mom to buy me a turntable and a mixer, and she did. It was a belt drive originally. I got a
It was tough.
So I originally got like a belt drive, turntable, and one mixer. I remember.
Was it a Gemini or a Technique?
It was a Gemini. It was a Gemini belt drive. Yeah, it was a Gemini
belt
drive.
So for those that are wondering,
belt drive is a direct drive.
Belt drive is like, you know, when you chicka chicka, exactly. It takes a long time to rev back up. So like. Without a Technique 1200, that you wasn't really doing nothing. So, but I remember I did like, it was a kid, his name was Ari Foreman. I did his birthday. You know Ari? Ari's still around. He's like, he's doing production and film and things like that.
He did some art for us, like him and Tramp, and like they designed.
It's so crazy how the world is still connected. Well, Philly. His birthday party was my first party. So I remember the first records.
Really?
Yeah, he went to Central with me.
Okay. Wait, you and Ari are the same age?
We are. Yeah, we came in.
Older than Ari? I'm way older than you. So by the transit of Axia, if A equals B, B equals C.
Yeah.
By a couple years.
Ari's so classy. Like, I always thought he was, like, slightly older than me.
Mm, yeah, we're in the same class. 255.
Because he's the one that introduced me to Cosmo. Okay, so go ahead. Uh-huh.
So I used to save my lunch money. My mom would give me like $5 every day for lunch.
What did your parents do, man? What was that?
My mom is a teacher. She's in education. She's been in education forever. She was, she now has her PhD in education. But when I was in growing up, she would teach in Philadelphia High School. She taught at Alney. She taught at Overbrook. Yeah, I think those were, she went from Alney to Overbrook. So she was at Overbrook when I was at Central. And my dad used to work for this Quaker organization in Philly called AFSC, American Friends Service Committee. Yes. And then part of his job was spending a lot of time in Eastern Europe. So, like, he used to travel to the USSR at the time. And, you know, and then later on, he would go to other parts of Eastern Europe and, like, you know, help out, like, what are known as gypsies, which pretty much are, like, you know, people of European descent, but they almost get treated as black people over there in a sense. And then my dad, you know, both my parents were very politically active growing up. So, like, my dad used to be in SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Yeah, so, you know, I grew up going to, like.
Because did you go to charter school? Did you go to one of the charter schools?
I didn't. I always wanted to go to a charter school.
Like Lotus Academy
I wanted to go to Friends Select or GFS or Penn Charter so bad. Like, because I knew so many kids that went there. It's funny because I put my daughters in the Friends schools and they're like, oh, Dad, why did you do this to us? And I was like, man, growing up, I wanted to go to a Friends school. But I think it might just be a Philly thing. It's Quaker.
Quaker, okay.
And that's like a PA thing. But I went to public school. Like, my parents couldn't afford me to go to those schools. So I went to Masterman and I went to Central. So I always went to, like, good academic schools. Like, I had good grades in school and what have you. So, yeah, so I used to go downtown between Armin's, Funko Mart, and Sounds of Market.
Yep.
And I would buy my records. And I would, you know, the first records I bought was, like, the Who's the Man soundtrack, Heavy D was Who's the Man.
Yeah.
Party and Bullshit was the B-side.
Mm-hmm. So you spend album cuts and the grooves are this small and not loud enough.
Feedback. Super Ghetto Red.
Ghetto Red Hot. Super Cat,
Ghetto Red Hot, Fat Joe, Flo Joe. Yeah, and I, you know, this was around a time when, like, in Philly, like, there was the Goats and then there was the Square Roots. And, you know, that was, you know, my introduction to, like, hip hop and DJing, and this was all around that era.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonte, Fontigolo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Well, first of all, you know, even for me, like, to be a drummer as young as I was, and I would get these catalogs, these Sam Ash catalogs, whatever, drums were like $7,000.
Right.
And so, I mean, lucky for me, my dad had like access to stuff, usually like band members that succumb to an addiction or whatever, and leave the equipment. And that's how I like, would inherit drum sets when I was younger. But like DJ equipment, though, man. Was like
right expensive.
Were you just on one turntable and one cheap Radio Shack joint or like a mixer
for a while? I had the what was the I guess it was the Gemini mixer that had the 8-second sampler.
Yes, the Scratch Master.
Yeah, I had that.
Oh my god!
How do you know that?
I had access to one. My homies had one.
That was like you were a DJ too?
No. I used to make beats on it.
Like, okay. It had the sampler.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you could loop, and you had to like turn the thing to catch it. You know,
perfectly.
And carry it perfectly. And yeah, my finger was like all tore up.
I remember I used to write my grandparents, my mother's parents, like letters. And like when I would get good grades, I would like write them letters like, hey, I got good grades. Like, can you get me this?
And, dearest Pappy.
And, you know, and then, you know, my grandparents actually, I think, were the ones who bought me my Technique 1200s. So they bought me my Technique 1200s, and then I would do little gigs here and there. And I think, you know, at Armin's at the time, like, or not even Armin's, I think at Funko Mart, you know, you could buy, speakers weren't like that expensive. So I bought like maybe like, you know, these big ass woofers and everything. And it might've been like $200-$300, $400 for a set.
Right.
And then you would have to buy a receiver. What else would you need?
That's all gift money, no job. You ain't got a job yet?
I didn't have a job. No, this was before a job. Okay. Yeah, I didn't get a job till like 11th, 12th grade. So yeah, it was all pretty much like gift, birthday and Christmas type gifts and stuff. But, you know, lunch money is how I did my record collection.
And then starve in school.
Starve, yeah.
Steal somebody's sandwich.
Yeah, maybe go across the street from Central and go to the pizza spot and maybe get a dollar slice or something. But, yeah. You know, definitely I would save up to get my records.
So were your parents encouraging, or did they see this as just like a hobby?
Definitely just saw it as a hobby.
Did you see this as a career or a hobby?
You know, interestingly enough, my sister was like is a filmmaker, and she used to do like make independent films, and hence how we first met, because she brought me to, I guess it was was it at Temple? It was for the premiere of Pass the Popcorn video.
Damn.
Wow.
And wow. there was a young lady who used to direct videos, because she did a 3x Dope video. I can't remember her name, but my sister was friends with her. And then, but she's the one that's how I wound up coming to the premiere of Pass the Popcorn. And that was where we originally first met. And I like came up to you as a young lad and just introduced myself.
Shout out to Abdul Jackson and Kevin Dre. I forget. Damn, man, you just took me back on some joints, man. Yeah. I totally forgot.
Oh, that. Yeah.
Y'all had a premiere party for that video.
For the video, right.
Like, just what? That
alone. The popcorn video.
So, yeah, like my last day at Rough House, just, you know, I just threw spaghetti on the wall and see if it stuck. And I just happened to ask Chris Schwartz right after lunch, because I would notice after lunch he'd be in a different mind state.
Yeah.
And I was just like, hey. You know, or Ben, he knew about the Roots and, you know, saw some shows or whatever, and always wondered, like, how can we even get a, you know, an offer? But he was just that day, he just like, okay, how much? I was like, 5,000?
Wow.
He said, you'll need 7,000. So he was like, 7,500 thing.
To do organics?
No, to do the Pass the Popcorn. And we shot Pass the Popcorn on Thanksgiving morning.
Wow.
Like, yeah. It's so, like, shout out to Chris Schwartz of Rough House Records.
And I remember, too, my other friends used to be cool with Kenyatta. I used to look I used to look up to Yacht. Like, but no, it was for them, it was a hobby. For me, it was still, you know, I thought I was going to wind up going to NYU and be in film school and be a director. Like, at the time, that's, but I loved DJing. Like, it was my thing. So I definitely had, you know, without even realizing, was putting way more time and effort into my DJ career. And then, you know, I had my stuff in my room at my mother's house. And then it got to a point when the traffic of the friends coming over and us trying to make little freestyle tapes and everything, she got fed up, because it was like 10:30, and she was like, yo, it's too loud. And so she let me move to the basement. And I moved, you know, that was my first studio in the basement of my mom's house. And we used to be down there boom bapping all day after school, every day. And that's where I made Illadelph. And, you know, I started. My sister took me to New York between 9th and 10th grade. And we went to Harlem. And on 125th, they still had the vendors. And that was when I bought my first mixtape, DJ SNS Old School Part 2.
Ah.
And the reason why I bought that tape was because all the songs that were on there, when I would go to the record stores, I couldn't get those songs on vinyl anymore, because they were, unless they were the, you know, the bootleg copies and everything. Right. So I bought SNS Old School Part 2, and I was just literally blown away, like, by that tape, by S's talk game, like how he was putting records together. And hence, that just really started my fascination with, like, mixtape culture. And then, you know, Clue kind of was coming up on the scene, and when I would get Clue tapes from the layup and things, like I would feel like when I would go to school, I'd be like, oh, y'all don't know about this yet. Like, y'all don't have this premiere J. Rue remix, or
right,
you know, this new Biggie Grand Puba Tupac song. Like, right. So I would feel ahead of the curve, and, you know, I was just that, you know. And when it came to, like, DJing, and, like, you know, there were battle DJs, there was radio DJs, there was, you know, party DJs, and there were mixtape DJs, but the mixtape DJ for me was always just, like, larger than life.
Wow. So for Philadelphians, the layup, my current production manager, Keith McPhee, kind of opened kind of like Philly's, I don't know if it's the first culture store, but it was like the spot it was like the spot where you could get, like, what was the first skateboarding gear? Like Fresh Jive.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Or
like Stussy.
You could get Stussy,
those
Triple Five.
Triple Five Soul.
Triple Five Soul.
Those hoodies.
Early Echo.
It's not the hoodies. Like, those, I can't remember. It's the...
Skateboard pants that are like the big at the bottom.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I forget 40, what they're called.
Yeah, the 40 waist Johns that were super big.
Yeah. So that's pretty much like... That was just like the cultural epicenter. That's where, like, mixtapes were.
Yeah.
You get Krylon spray paint.
Yep. You get to caps.
All those things.
Oh, everything was
get
there.
Get a Source magazine.
They have the white man dashiki. The
Yes, with the...
Yeah, those things.
That, oh, I know what you're talking about. The hoodie that got the pockets right here. The hoodie with the pockets. Stripes, yeah. It looks like it maybe
you see
some,
like five white boys at lunch playing hacky sack and
shit? Yes.
I would rock that shit all the time, And never shower, so all the fuck in the world's is inside of that.
Love your
drawers.
Honesty. It's your truth.
Yeah,
your
come truth. On, dog. I mean, the only reason why dudes would shower in their 20s is if a woman is involved or whatever, like their future partner. But, you know.
Come back.
Yeah, I'm coming back. Anyway, who is the DJ? Okay, I'm going to try my Rock the Bells thing, just like Jeff does.
Yeah.
Or my Cash Money thing, whatever. But for me, I will say that, like, Cosmic Kev is probably the Cincy DJ that I always have in my head when I'm doing a set or whatever. Like, you're always going to emulate someone because, like, if you're making beats.
Right.
When you get your drum machine, you start to, you know.
Right.
All right, let me see if I could do blah, 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 blah. That sort of thing. Mm-hmm. For you as a DJ.
Who were those DJs?
Who was the Cincy? Like, who was the mix that was sort of like, damn, I gotta.
Well, I mean.
Or were you even into turntablism or blending?
I was gonna tell you. I mean, because there was. So for me, it was a few. I mean, definitely probably first, it was DJ Ran because.
Damn, yes,
I forgot Ran.
Yeah, because before, Ran. You know, before.
Ran's still spinning, right?
Yeah, he was like with the WWF forever.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not sure. Shout to Cosmic Kev, too. He just took me on a super history lesson. Like,
was he nice about it?
Who, Kev?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We talked for like 2 hours about...
Kev has been gentle lately. We've been exchanging nice words.
We discussed like his relationship with Ran and how things came about and how, you know, it went from Ran to Kev and, you know, but when, of course, as a youngster, like it was Kobe Kolb and DJ Ran on Radioactive every Friday night. So, you know, people don't really like, this is obviously before we had, you know, you can go on YouTube, Hulu, anything, and watch anything hip hop you want. Back in the day, we only had certain outlets, so you would run home to catch Rap City, or Friday night I would be tuned in to Radioactive to hear it. So, oh, you know who else too?
What?
Yeah. It's fucking Jay Ski.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Talk about Jay. God damn it! Happy 50th birthday, Jay's fucking
50th, right?
Yes, I think, man. He did. He turned 50. Yes. Because
what was the station? It was 103.
Yeah, 103.
103 something.
You stupid with the Jay Ski
with Zulu. As a family.
Zulu, what is Zulu, man?
Zulu's around. He came to his birthday party.
Zulu was there?
Yes,
damn.
On the radio side, it was definitely Ran, Kev, and Jay Ski. And then in Philly, for me, it was DJ Ghetto. And Ghetto was like...
Yes,
you know,
DJ Ghetto.
Yeah, Ghetto used to be our DMC champion. He would... Wow. He would go up against Rock Raider, rest in peace, and, you know, do his DMC thing and, like... You know, Ghetto has another cousin named Evil Tracy, too. But Ghetto kind of, like, you know, took me in as a youngster and was trying to kind of show me how to really cut and scratch and, you know, do things on his level. I could never get it down to that degree. But Ghetto definitely, like, befriended me as a young DJ, too, in Philly. So I salute to him. So those were the guys that I was around or were listening to early on.
So when you're in the dramatic era... Do you have a regular residency? Are you doing high schools?
So Dances is the first club I ever DJed at.
Bobby Dances. Yes.
It was for Juwan Lee's birthday party.
The Eagle? No, Juwan Lee.
Juwan Lee, he's a director. He works with Benny Boom. He does a lot of stuff now, too. He's my brother to this day. I just saw him the other day. But yeah, that was my first actual club gig. Was Juwan's birthday party at Dances. This might have been like 11th grade. And then I was just doing like, I would get hired to do like block parties or like birthday parties of, you know, kids that I went to school with or, you know, that I knew around town or what have you. And then, you know, I remember we had this crew it was this crib off Girard Avenue that we lived at, and I used to do a lot of their functions. So, you know, I was getting, you know, gigs here and there, just like around Philly as a kid.
Now, as far as your creative output is concerned, and I specifically want to kind of go step by step,
absolutely,
which is why I'm like leading there.
It's a lot.
So, for you, are you in the mind state of serve my audience or... Like, I'll admit, I'm very selfish with my DJing, and I do it like I'm like Prince right. doing Darling Nikki. No one cares about the music but yourself.
Yeah.
And but I also know that I have a shield of protection that will allow me to play a Mr. Rogers song, or I could play the number song by the Pointer Sisters on Sesame Street.
Yeah.
And kind of get, you know, they'll be like, what the hell is he playing? I'm like, yeah, that Questlove's so crazy. Right. Like, I know I can do rogue shit.
Right.
And, you know, and oftentimes the openers are like, yo, man, like, that was crazy you did that. Because even one time, I think Fonte mentioned that someone spun Return to Forever or something.
It
like,
was...
Or Weather Report.
Yeah, it was out of... who was it? It was the Detroit. It wasn't... I think it was Theo Parrish.
Okay. Yeah, well, he's known for daredevil shit.
Yeah.
But my whole point is that as a DJ, you kind of have two choices, which is serve the people
mm-hmm.
or establish yourself.
Right.
So at the time, and oftentimes like opening DJs have it the hardest because mm-hmm. they got to, you got to keep them on the floor. You yep. can't, I remember once an opening DJ got in trouble. He had like an early copy of Brooklyn Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might have been too, you know, I would, of course, you know, it was like, oh, the new Wu-Tang joint,
mm-hmm.
Brooklyn Zoo, okay. Mm-hmm. But
it wasn't.
The club owner was like,
no,
you know, that sort of thing. So for you, were you facing any sort of venue structure that would tell you, like, this is what we want and just play R&B or?
So not in Philly. When I was in Philly, I was very stubborn and very East Coast with my taste in music and what I would play. Like, I remember I would do parties and want to play Dr. Octagon.
You know wow.
Oh, Jesus. Wow. H. Christ.
Yeah, like, that's where I was at. Like, I wanted to
you
play.
You tried to make Blue Flowers work, huh?
Yeah, I see, exactly. Yeah, like, I was, that's where I was at in my Philly days. And, you know, I wanted to play fucking Smith & Wesson album cuts and
album cuts.
Just, you know, I didn't get to the stage or era of pleasing the crowd or my audience until I moved to Atlanta. Atlanta did it.
And I don't even want to frame it like it's a compromise. Because I do think that you're either going to be an effective DJ
yeah.
or you're going to be a teachable lesson DJ.
Yeah, well, I was blessed in my career to be able to be that later on because of who I became and who I was. So once I became DJ Drama, it's like, okay, when they come to see me, they also want to be able to, I can, you know, introduce them to something or be a little more stubborn. But it's really going to Clark Atlanta University and being in the AUC for me coming from Philly where I would have people from D.C. who wanted to hear Go-Go.
Yep.
I would have, you know, people from the West Coast who wanted to hear shit from L.A. or the Bay. Or I would have people from Texas who wanted to hear Screw or what have you. So it taught me how to be well-rounded.
So, okay, so... And that's where I was going to go next. You know, the whole, I mean, especially now, you kind of morphed into your drama-ness before the age of cell phones. So the whole idea of someone putting their phone in your
insane,
face.
Insane, like, yeah.
Like, I'm a no-request person.
Got you.
And that's where my ego gets me in trouble.
Yeah, I'm not like that.
So you're a person of the people.
I am.
Thank you, God.
I'm definitely a person of the people.
I thought that was old school.
No. I like when people, like, if I go to Vegas and it's eight women who keep putting Bad Bunny on their phone, I got to play fucking Bad Bunny.
So like, even to this day, you're not offended? Like, motherfucker, I'm DJ Drama. Like, I created stars.
Right, right.
You don't tell Picasso what to paint. Don't. See, that I got an ego.
But it's a part of the job.
But that's not, and that's not the capacity he's there to serve that night. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the gig, too. Like, if I get a hipster New York gig for, like, I did something for United Masters, and, you know, that night they booked me. Like, I know they want to hear drama shit. Like, I'm going to play Canon Remix, and I'm going to, you know, go in and play some Gucci or go here with it. But, you know, if I'm at my Vegas residency, like, I'm there to
do the Vegas shit.
Yeah, like, yeah. Now I'm not, at the same time, like,
right,
I'm still DJ Drama, yourself, so yeah. I'm not about to fist pump that thing out.
Yeah, I was going to say, right. Have you ever had moment, or at least that was sort of the shit back in 2014.
Yeah, I mean, I've played those records at times, like,
What?
But that's not the majority of my set. Like, I know when they book me, like, they want to, they come there for a certain reason.
Yeah,
like,
I get it.
Like, when I go even to Vegas, like, and you know, Vegas has had a transition at time where it's become much more hip hop driven than it was. But I'm just saying, like, when I go to gigs, like, people want to hear DJ Drama be DJ Drama. You know what I'm saying? So it's like.
But is it confusing now at this stage in your life where. Okay, nice. So say an album that I would associate you with, like any Canyon records. So let's say like Go Crazy.
Right.
Which came out in 2009, 2008.
Right. Yeah.
Which, to an old guy to me, I'm still like, oh, that's new rap, even though that's old school. Right.
Yeah. No. So, no, I mean.
So is it confusing now?
No, not for me, because I go with the times and I go, like, I just got off a tour with Wiz and Logic, for instance. So, but, and the blessing for me is, though, is that, that's not, like, as much as there's an audience that knows me for that, when I get on stage at the Wiz Khalifa and Logic show, I start with a Tyler, the Creator record. Yeah. And then I go into a dream, I play Stick off the Dreamville tape. Because that's still my shit. Like, it's still off Gangsta Grills.
That's when DJ Dramatic, to me, kind of enters the thing. I know you. I don't know if you hate when I go DJ Dramatic versus Drama, but it's just how I can define it.
I knew you when you was a mirror.
No, it's not.
But I was Drama first, though. I mean, it wasn't like I was Dramatic. No, I was Drama, and then I tried to change it to Dramatic, and then I went back. So it wasn't like I was originally DJ Dramatic. I was DJ Drama first.
But you, okay, I'll accept that. But you know, when I say Dramatic, it's also like to an era, a time when you did have a certain lane that you were in that you have kind of left since.
Well, what happened was, I didn't know. I mean, like, as much as I was putting into Gangsta Grills, I was putting into Automatic Relaxation. Aww. One just took off from the other.
Okay, so let me ask you. When you decide to go to Clark University.
Yep. Clark Atlanta. Yep.
And I assume that you're transporting your equipment with you.
Yep.
So, and that's important. Like, you already know that in your dorm that your big-ass speakers and your records and your turntables.
All had to come with me.
Are coming with you. Okay.
Absolutely.
No question.
Without
were your parents like, what the hell are you doing? Like, you're in a dorm.
How's
I mean, they by that point, I was already, like, kind of. You know, it was clear that I was on a certain path, and I was, you know, this DJ thing was.
So it's going to happen in college, not just some high school thing. And
I don't know if they knew. I mean, clearly they didn't see this happening. Like, you know, I mean, my mom, even after school, was concerned about me getting a real, quote unquote, real job. But yeah, I mean, when I got to school, like, it was, you know, I brought my Philly hustle with me. Like, Lael will tell you, like, freshman year when everybody was freak-nicked out, I bought a bunch of T-shirts from this guy named Moot, and I was hustling T-shirts during freak-nick. Like, I didn't partake in none of the activities. Like, or I would set up on campus we had these green trash cans, and I had this little yellow radio, and I would, like, hustle my mixtapes in between classes. So,
how did you find an outlet to establish yourself in Atlanta?
Well, I mean, the outlet was the AUC. It was our world. I mean, there was enough.
And marketing at Marcos? You feel like working at Marcos, too?
Marcos Peter.
I didn't go to college. AUC.
The AUC. Atlanta University Center. So that's Clark, Atlanta. That's Morris Brown at the time. That's Morehouse and Spelman. So you literally have four historically black colleges and universities right in one epicenter. So there's multitudes of parties and gigs available. So I was.
Did you try to find your flock, or
no? I can't.
Or
I mean,
were you like, okay, where do they into down here?
It just happened naturally, because you know, as you start doing gigs, I mean, you realize, oh, I got people from everywhere. So you know, I learned very early on, and I shout to my man DJ Sense, and Sense is also from Philly. We met freshman year, and he kind of was a little more commercially driven than I was at the time. Like, I was real backpack rap, and he was like. Bad
time.
Boy, you know what I'm saying? So us doing gigs together, he kind of helped influence and inspire me to get, you know, he yelled at me one time, I cut the Benjamins off too early.
Oh, wow.
At a gig. And he was like, bro, like, you can't cut it off at this part. And he was right, you know what I'm saying? So us doing gigs together, I kind of got more into my commercial bag. And, you know, because I still, even when I was in school, when I was doing these college gigs, I was still DJing lyricist lounges. I was still at Yin Yang Cafe
poetry. You know, you was at Yin Yang.
You know what I mean? Like, I was still into that world. So I was bouncing between worlds in a way.
Who was the DJ down here that was your, oh shit, or your Kaiser Sosa coffee mug slow drop realization thing that this is some next shit down here that I have to.
First, it was DJ Nabs. Nabs was the ultimate. I mean, he was on the radio, he was on television, he had Nabs in the lab at Club Kaya Sunday night, which was just the ultimate experience. And then I think for me, it probably was DJ Mars. Mars also at the time was, you know, he used to be on, he had a BET gig, so he was doing, what was that show called? It was one of them shows. Mars was on the radio, you know, he was on every day, and he was in the club, so he was like one of those, like the guys that we looked towards as like, damn, that's the next level. So, and it's funny because I did the same thing with you too. I know you don't remember this, but I used to like write for this like little magazine or like little zine, and I went and did an interview with Mars. That's how I introduced myself to him. I went to go interview him at the station, and then I handed him one of my mixtapes, and he was like, yo, this shit's hot. And oddly enough, when you guys came to Atlanta one time, I did the same thing with you. I did an interview with you for the magazine, and that was how I first found out about Dilla, because this was the era where you were Dilla it out, and you told me like, yo, all we do is listen to Slum Village. And this is mid, late 90s and everything. And yeah, so I would kind of, you know, wiggle my way in, however, whatever, to you know, get my name out there or get my tapes in people's hands.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. 'Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like, I feel like Atlanta really found itself with what Organized Noize and Outkast and all those guys established.
Absolutely.
So, but the thing is that I didn't call it anything. Like, I know, like, New Orleans is bounce and there's bass music in Miami. But what was Atlanta's culture before trap? Like, does Atlanta own what we know as trap?
Absolutely. 100%.
So what was before the BC era of that?
It was Dungeon Family. I mean, so I moved here in 96.
Okay.
96, Illadelph Half-Life came out. 96, ATLians came out.
Muddy Waters, Redman.
Muddy Waters came out.
Reasonable.
Mobb Deep, second album came out.
Hell on Earth, yeah.
Hell on Earth came out.
The Score.
And I have an Elevators question to ask you. Cause
I came right when Elevators kind of hit. Like,
okay, so let me ask you something. All right, and why is Elevators like my new Latin Quarters?
So many tangents we can go. So much I got to talk. I want to say, like.
So, just while we're here. All right, so when we asked, you know, L.A. Reid and Organized Noise, my thing was, I would ask them, why would they take such a risk with the sonic choice of Elevators? Yes, it's a masterpiece of a song, but.
But who knew at the time?
I was just like, yo, who would ever put like a song that's like 86 BPMs, which was very slow at the time compared to what was hitting. And it was just everything about that song was just like, it was a risk. It was a Hail Mary throw that got caught. And, you know, Organized Noise explained that, you know, they leaked it first. And, of course, L.A. Reid really wanted ATLNs to come out first.
They put it, they took it to the radio station and just like.
Enforced it. Right, right. And then, but as a DJ, like, could you explain to me the effect that that song had on, or just at the time, like.
Yeah, I mean, it was Atlanta. So, again, there was. When ATLians dropped, just, you know, the pride and the sonics and the creativity of that album, you know, Southern Playalistic was already a thing.
Right.
And then ATLians came and it was like, oh, these boys is different, you know. I mean, that was the era when 3000 was walking around with the turban and, you know, Goody Mob had, you know, dropped and everything. So it was like, I just think the pride in it. You know, I hear stories about before Outkast about how you would go to certain clubs in Atlanta, like Warehouse and things, and people would almost want to kind of act like they were from New York, you know? And then.
He just said, he yeah, just they said just said that. Yeah.
Did he? And then it was Outkast that was almost brought that pride out where it made people in Atlanta feel proud to be from Atlanta
their
or from
identity.
The South.
You know I get what I'm saying? It now.
So, yeah, so before the trap era, you know, Atlanta was defined by Dungeon Family, by So Def, and, you know, by LaFace Records. And that was the, you know, the trifecta of what Atlanta was.
So when you are down here, at what point the cast of characters that were known as the Affiliates, how are they amalgamating themselves in your life? Like, are you meeting them now at this point?
So I met DJ Sense literally the first day I get to school in Clark, Atlanta. I get in, we go to the dorm to Brawley Hall, and my room number was 215. Crazy, right? And then somebody told Sense, hey, you know there's a DJ on the second floor from Philly. And he told me he had kind of already heard about me in Philly, like, you know, it's crazy to think I had a little buzz, but
he had a rut.
He knew about me. So we like battled it. We battled in my room like the first day we met, just kind of going back and forth on the turntables, cutting and scratching. And then, you know, we were doing parties together and we were, you know, like a dynamic duo. And just, you know, people would book me or book him or we would go together and we would do all the parties. And then my next year, this tall, lanky kid gets on campus and like he had heard about me and he kind of was like, yo, my name's Donnie Brasco. I'm from Philly and I'm a DJ. I make beats. And I was kind of, you know, Kyle, you know, him and Kyle went to school together. So Kyle kind of like put a sour taste in my mouth early on, like that Cannon was a nut.
Kyle was part of Tyree and them's crew. Yeah. It was a whole crew of Philly dudes.
We weren't even all Philly. It was Dame.
Well, Dame, yeah.
Dame was there.
You had a North Carolina. Yeah, Carolina.
It was Chris and Ely. It was Dame. It was me, Sense. And I had like my school crew and then I had like my Rubik's, Jax, and you know, my hip hop, my Binkus crew. But
wow, Binkus.
Rest in peace to my brother Jax. Yeah, but man. So finally Cannon wound up giving me a beat CD and I went home and I listened to it and I was like, yo, this shit is fucking fire. So next day I see him on campus, I'm like, yo, I've listened to your beat tape. That shit's hard. Like, you know, come through the crib. So it went from me and Sense to me, Sense and Cannon, and then we were just the three of us were like, you know, damn near inseparable. Like, doing while we were in school, and we would do a bunch of gigs together or just support each other. Or, you know, when I was selling tapes, like Canon and Sense would make their tapes and I would, you know, I would sell them all, and we would just do events together. But the way the affiliates came about is because there was a crew called the Super Friends, which was DJ Mars, DJ Trauma. It was Cowboy was in there, Fahrenheit, Shaquem was Super Friends, and they made us part. We were like the youngest of the crew, and they, you know, invited us in.
And the DJ Trauma that is currently with Chappelle. Okay, yeah. Okay. Just
and you know,
make sure.
It was, you know, that was one of the reasons why I tried to change my name to Dramatic. It's because of Trauma. Because
Trauma and Drama.
And his name is Tyree.
And y'all both had
and we
locks.
We both had locks at the they time.
Broke? Oh, man.
And he was on the radio and he was on fire. And it was like everywhere I would go and try to say I'm DJ Drama, they'd be like, Drama? And I'd be like, no, Drama. And it just used to frustrate me. Like, man, I'm about to just change my name. And Mars, you know, interestingly enough, was like, yo, don't change your name for nobody. And Trauma was his best friend. But he, you know, he said, yo, don't change your name for nobody. Like, if that's your name, that's your name. So we were part of the Super Friends, and we were really trying to be focused like on mixtapes, and the Super Friends were very party driven, and we kind of we went through a little disagreement at the time. As my memory serves me, Jacob York offered the Super Friends opportunity to do an album, and we were kind of already, you know, feeling a certain type of way because, you know, we weren't like they were getting all the gigs, and, you know, we were trying to make our name. We couldn't get no sponsorship for the mixtapes because they were getting all the sponsorship for the parties and everything. Right. And they were like, yo, if we do an album, let's call it Gangsta Grills because that's the strongest brand out of all of us. And I was like, I don't want to call the Super Friends album Gangsta Grills. Like, that's my shit. So they basically
wait,
like,
when did you morph into Gangsta Grills?
I started Gangsta Grills in 2000. So by like 03, 04, it had become a thing. Like, where it was, you know, Little John was the first person to host it. So I used his voice on Gangsta Grills 4. And it was still just like a compilation at the time. And, you know, I did like Gangsta Grills 5 and I just kept using John's voice.
Right. How do you approach an artist? Because for a lot of the artists that were on Gangsta Grills mixtape, like as an outsider, I didn't know none of those people. So, you know, I'm hearing T.I. for the first time. I'm hearing like everyone that you put on.
Jeezy.
Trapper Dot. Yeah. Jeezy. Yeah, and Jeezy, yeah. All those things. Even like, really the first time I really paid attention to Wayne and all that stuff is really on Gangsta Grills.
Right.
So, like, how are you propositioning them and approaching them to do these things?
Each situation is differs in a way, but, like, Little John was, Sense was working at the station, and Cersei and Little John were partners in BME, and John used to be up there all the time, and, you know, John was, he's one of the most down-to-earth, humble guys in the world. And I literally just asked him, you know, this was a time when I was paying attention to what was going on the East Coast. And I asked him, like, yo, would you host a mixtape for me? And he was like, sure. And he came to my crib in the Fourth Ward, and hence the Gangsta Grizzles drop was born. And, you know, he hosted the tape. Jason Jeter is the first person to ever call me. He got my number off the back of a mixtape from the barbershop.
Right.
Now, think about this. I get 1,000 DMs a day about artists trying to get on. The first phone call I ever got was from Jason Jeter, and he was like, hey, my name's Jason Jeter. I have this new artist signed to LaFace. We have a song with Beanie Siegel called 2 Glocks 9. I got one of your mixtapes. I want to bring him through to freestyle on one of your tapes. And I was like, all right, sure, cool, whatever. So
sight unseen, you don't know.
Never met Tip, never wasn't even familiar with the 2 Glocks 9 record yet.
Right.
So he literally comes to the crib, Jeter and Tip, super shy and quiet at the time. You know, I had my equipment in like where the laundry room would be. He comes in there, I pick a beat. I pick for the fam beat, the Rockefeller.
Yeah.
With the one with a mill and everybody on it. Right. And he freestyled on that. And at the end of the freestyle, he said, you know, the king of the South. And I remember once him and Jeter left, I went to Sense like, yo, this nigga said he's the king of the South. Like, he's tripping. Like, so that was literally our introduction. And then, you know, Jeter was also from Jersey. So he was paying attention to my mixtape grind and what I was doing. And they were kind of, you know, once things didn't work out between them and L.A. Reid. They got on their mixtape grind, so we were kind of both coming up at the same time. Where I lived on Glen Iris, Coach K lived around the corner from me.
Ah, okay.
We got cool with Coach K. He had this group called Jadis, who Bobby Creekwater was a part of, who later got signed to Shady.
Yeah, he was on Shady, yeah.
That was Coach K's first group. And then he also used to work for Alan Henderson in Hindu when Alan Henderson had a record label. But we got cool with Coach K, and then he told me, like, yo, I got this artist from Macon. His name is Jeezy. And he had an album out. The first album they put out was called Come Shop With Me. And then Jeezy, Coach would bring Jeezy over, and I would make show CDs for Jeezy. I would charge him like $100, and he would come, and he was doing shows in Macon.
Okay.
And I would like make CDs. He would take instrumentals, whatever instrumentals were hot at the time, and I would just make them little like show CDs to put together. As Gangsta Grills was becoming a thing, so then I did like John Tape, then like I think Scrappy hosted one. Then Jeter called me and was like, yo, I've been listening to the tapes. I got this idea. Let's do an all T.I. and PSC Gangsta Grills. And I was like, bet, you know. And at the time, I'm just fascinated by Green Lantern and Who Kid and what Fifth is doing and what they're doing. And so Jeter and Tip gave me the opportunity to do the type of mixtape that I wanted to do.
So you felt, because I'm just amazed at your amount of faith. It's so weird. Like, I need to have this conversation because I'm such a no now, no, or who gonna be there?
Who all gonna be there?
Who all gonna be there? Like that sort of thing, and get me out of this or whatever. Right. But it seems to me that the key to your success is the word yes.
Absolutely.
Yes and.
Absolutely.
I'm the type of guy,
when I go outside, I give my number to everybody.
Wow.
The worst thing that I can do is not answer.
It's not right.
Because I think about that all the time. What if I would have told Jeter no?
Wow.
So
now I think about all the news I've told the Jeters in my life.
Now don't get me wrong. I've missed out on some things.
Have you passed up on a moment that like, damn, I could have had blah blah blah?
Of course.
Name three. Three notable. You probably worked with them since, but at least like you could at least introduce them to the world or whatever.
I mean, I've said this before, but Drake definitely wanted a Gangsta Grills. Very early on.
All right.
For sure.
And you didn't know about him, or it was just like you were too busy, or?
It didn't happen. You know, I mean, he went and he did a Southern Smalls tape, like DJ Smalls. So
right at
the time, there was Southern Smoke and there was Gangsta Grills. So, and then Bun B was a very early believer. So then I did the tip Gangsta Grills, and that just like took off in the streets. And it was like, you know, Tip was on fire. Gangsta Grills was becoming a thing. And, you know, that was the soundtrack of the streets in Atlanta, the T.I. PSC meets Gangsta Grills. And then I did a tape for Bun. And then I did a Gangsta Grills party. And it was in Buckhead. And I think Tip hosted, Bone Crusher hosted, I think David Banner. Yeah, I did a tape with David Banner, Bone Crusher hosted. And I was Gangsta Grills like 7. And it was like that was insane. That was a big one. But it was still a compilation at the time.
Right.
So then Coach and Jeezy took me out. They wanted to take me to lunch one day. So they took me to the spot called Harry and Sons. And Jeezy tells me, yo, I was at your party. Yo, I don't know how much you know, but the streets, like, fuck with you. You know, and I'm like, where? Like, you know, I'm in the streets selling
mixtapes. You're unaware of this?
Yeah, I'm very unaware. Like when what his streets are wasn't what my streets were.
That
like,
part.
My streets were
even
like,
being in Atlanta?
Yeah, well, I was familiar, you know what I'm saying, because I was doing parties for, like, BMF and things of that nature. But the streets for me were, like, going to the flea market and selling boxes of CDs, you know.
You're not going to Bankhead or
I'm going
East
anywhere.
Point or
I'm going anywhere that they sell CDs, I'm going.
Okay.
But I'm not, you know.
In the streets.
Yeah, I'm selling mixtapes.
Out the car, just dropping in
I'm
the
not
hood,
selling
yeah.
nothing but mixtapes.
No.
Right, that
so,
part.
You know, yeah. So then, you know, Jeezy tells me, like, yo, when Meech goes to campus, that's where he goes and gets his Gangsta Grills from. Like, he's listening to your shit. And he's like, listen, I got this vision. Like, I want to do a Gangsta Grills with you. Like, he had it all mapped out. And I was listening, like, no doubt. But at the time, I had never done a tape with somebody who wasn't known yet. And that was the first time I got paid for a tape. They gave me $1,000. And we did the tape. It was called Streets is Watching.
God damn.
It was
I could have changed my life with just 10 $100 bills.
Right?
What the fuck?
Back
Why
then.
Did we go to you?
Back then, right.
I had $1,000. Shit.
He paid me $1,000 to do the tape.
He was already working good.
Yeah, you was on, like, what are we talking
right?
about?
Right, like on fifth record.
Yeah, how many, Grammys did you have by this point?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Like, come on.
Oh, yeah, you, yeah.
We,
you got
we
me.
Still, to this day, we, it's almost like we cut, like someone took us to the front of the bank line on
a
Friday.
Cut. Yeah, yeah.
And I got we got to go back to Baltic Avenue and Mediterranean Avenue and Oriental Avenue. Like, we got Park Place and all that stuff, but we realized that there's an early gap that we skipped. And it doesn't matter. Like, I could have 42 Oscars. We have to scratch that itch with black people.
Yeah, they never did, like, the conferences and stuff, like the How to Be Down, Jack the Rapper, Impact, all that.
We wanted to, but, you know, Geffen wouldn't have that. So anyway, so go.
So then, so originally the tape was called G's Up, but that was the name of Scrappy's group at the time. So we changed it to Streets is Watching. So when I did Streets is Watching, again, Gangsta Grillz was a bigger brand than Young Jeezy at the time. So we put the tape out, and we put it out around Birthday Bash era. And, you know, within a couple months, I mean, I remember the first person to ever tell me, my man Jay, who does Raw Report, who wound up doing a DVD with Jeezy for Trap or Die, but I was on Glen Iris with my dad, and he was driving by, and he was like, yo, that Jeezy tape, that's the best Gangsta Grillz you've ever done. Wow. And I'm like, word? I just told Jeezy this the other day. And I was like, word? The new nigga? Like, because I'm T-I'd out. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it's Tip, the King, like, I'm on fire with Tip. And he's like, yo, the Jeezy tape, like, that shit hits different. So, you know, a couple months in, Coach K is like, Drom, you got to come on the road with us. Like, you got to see what's going on. Like, they're doing this word for word.
There's one thing you're skipping. I got to know this. As far as the marketing and the distribution,
yeah,
is there only one place to get this? Because how is Tariq? Well, I mean, I guess y'all, I don't know how he got your joints.
Nah,
but.
So really, thankfully, the bootleggers were like taking my shit to the next level. They were doing a lot of the legwork for me.
So you didn't know that you were national?
No, when Gangsta Grillz 7 came out, I wound up finding out where the bootleg spot was. And this was around the time, no, I'm sorry, it was Gangsta Grillz 6. It was Gangsta Grillz 6. But it was 50 Cent, Get Rich or Die Trying had just came out. We wound up finding out where the bootleg spot were in the West End. And we went there, and I literally saw as many Gangsta Grillz 6s as I did Get Rich or Die Trying bootlegs. Wow. And I was like fascinated. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Not thinking, damn, like, I'm not really making a lot of money, but these niggas is making a lot of money off my shit. But it's a mixtape. So it was, for me, it was you know, it was a calling. Like, I mean, it was my calling card. Like, so I was just excited, and I was moving around. Like, I would come to Canal Street in New York, and I would, you know, even at a time when they were telling me, like, nah, we don't really check for South mixtapes, I would just be like, listen, take this. It's all yours, like, you know, and let me know how it does. And I would call back a couple weeks, months later, and they'd be like, yo, send us some more. So
when did that start? Is that like after 6? Is that from the jump? Or is that like?
It was all around that time, around 6, okay. By the time Trap or Die came out, Gangsta Grillz was the thing. Yeah. So it was like, I didn't go anywhere in the country. I was on tour with T.I. at the time, and I was hearing my shit come out of every car. And then I was like, damn, what I'm going to do next? And the next tape I did was Dedication.
Okay, y'all, so that's going to conclude part one of our conversation with DJ Drama. But wait a minute, you need to stay tuned for part two, where we speak to Drama about making mixtape classics with Lil Wayne, his evolution from making those tapes to platinum hits, and why he is so proud about working with Fonte and Lil Brother on Separate But Equal. Oh, y'all don't want to miss that conversation. It gets deep and so good. But listen, stay tuned, because we got more with my family repping CAU all day, DJ Drama.
Much Love Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.